high schools cannot find a person skilled at math. They can find somebody with a math degree, but the guy is teaching biology. He doesn't want to teach math. So to find a really gifted math teacher who makes the subject fun, who gives you good working examples where you can therefore remember it. I mean, to remember that to be taught a piece of theory as a pure equation or a pure piece of theory, nobody remembers it other than memorizing it long enough to pass that particular test, and it gets wiped out of your mind. You get a gifted teacher who shows you how it affects whether or not your tower will keep standing and whether or not the wind is going to break your antenna. You give it something practical like that with math, and the guy's eyes light up and he says, yeah, I'm interested in that. I'm going to remember that. It takes a gifted teacher to do that. There seems to be very few gifted math teachers. Therefore, a hell of a lot of people are ending up math hostile. They hate the subject. They don't know why. They're the victim. We're blaming the victim when we blame people for not knowing math. Nobody intentionally says, I don't want to know that subject. They get introduced to it in a poor manner. It gives them a bad taste in their mouth, and they'd rather avoid it downrange. All the girls in my house are very math hostile, and as I interview them, I find out they had a terrible beginning in that particular subject. They're the victim, in my opinion. That's some of what I think is going on, Mel. K2KEY, K2RIW, in the TechNet.
Yeah, you're 100% right. This is K2KEY. I had the same thing with the girls here. In fact, I think I must have maybe once before told you the funny story. My daughter, I think, maybe 1A, they were just learning adding. And, subtraction, adding, multiplying, basically what they start teaching in 1A. And the teacher put a problem on a blackboard, and she asked if anyone had the answer, and my daughter's hand went up, Julie's hand went up instantly. And put another one on, another one, up, her hand went up instantly. So she asked Julie to come up to the blackboard and show us how you did it. My daughter comes up there, and she shows us on her wrist, she has the calculator watch. I had bought her this watch. You have to be little fingers, you really have to have little fingers. Oh boy, I'm telling you, the buttons on that thing were really, I don't know how you could, a regular human being, or an adult could use that calculator on it. But I had that whole calculator on that. You should see that watch. It's a real contraption. And she pushed the buttons on it and showed, here's the answer. And the teacher says, no, I want you to do it on the blackboard and all. So my daughter says, well, why do they make these things? There's the answer. Why do they make these things? Because this is what it comes down to now. Everybody wants simple. You need to write a report. You go to the computer, to the internet, get all this thing, write it right out there, push print, and it's done. This is why... Like, for instance, with math, I had that one. With the other one, I had to go up to school because the teacher was showing how to... The teacher went through this rigmarole of teaching the multiplication table. And I took a simple way. I taught the kids here a simple thing. I took take a piece of paper, you fold it up, and it makes... You fold it one way, and then you fold it the other way, and it makes, boxes 10 across, 10 down. And you put the numbers 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and you do the same thing in the bottom, the same way. I don't remember how I laid it out, and then you just do the cross things, and that's way you can learn multiplication and division simultaneously. And, you just memorize it, basically. And my daughter, the one, she could rattle right off the whole thing, and the teacher, sort of got perturbed, so she told the teacher, she said, well, my father's an engineer, and this is the way he taught it, blah, 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 blah. And open school, I went up there, and I said, I don't know. I don't understand how you teach this modern. They should show me something, what they do with pyramids and all, making pyramids with the numbers and all. I just said to myself, no wonder the kids don't know what the heck's going on. I'm scratching my head. But what do you do? Like I say, this is the system now. Go ahead.
It's a little bit sad. I'm going to change subject for a second, and we can come back to this if you like. For a whole lot of years, from my youth, I've always wanted to own a Van de Graaff generator. That's one of these things that looks like a water tower, so to speak. It's got a great ball on the top. You stand on a plastic chair, you put your hand on it, it'll make your hair stand on end. It makes great big sparks that are not dangerous, although they're a little uncomfortable, you touch them. So I've wanted to own a Van de Graaff generator. 2 months ago, 2 weeks ago, I bought one on the internet. I was doing some research, by the way, on the internet. Boy, can you find things. So I wanted a Van de Graaff generator, and I found one at a fairly nice price at this science equipment place in Florida, in San Augustine, Florida. Oh, no, this one I bought from Buffalo. I bought the Wimhurst machine from Florida. I bought the Wimhurst machine. And I bought the Van de Graaff generator from Buffalo. It arrived last week, turned it on. The thing works like a charm, although you got to be sure that everything is dry. You get any moisture in there, and it starts decreasing in its power output. And I can explain that. In fact, I'll give you a quick explanation. Assuming that your Van de Graaff generator, it really makes 200 kilovolts, but I'll round off the numbers. It makes 100,000 volts. Very low current, very low capacitance. It's fairly safe, but it makes 100,000 volts. That's 10 to the 5 volts in exponential mathematics. It's capable of generating something like 1 microampere of current. So it's 10 to the minus 6 amperes. So if you were putting a load resistor across it, and you wanted to load it down to half voltage output, what resistor would you use? You and I know something called the half voltage method, which means you make the resistor on the outside equal the Thevenin equivalent resistor that's inside the box of your signal generator. I'm considering the Van de Graaff generator as a signal generator. Since it makes 10 to the 5 volts and 10 to the minus 6 amperes, 1 microampere, resistance R equals V over I, voltage over current. Voltage is 10 to the plus 5. That's on top of the numerator. Current that you're dividing into it, V over I. I is 10 to the minus 6. You divide 10 to the plus 5 by 10 to the minus 6, and you get 10 to the 11. What is 10 to the 11 ohms? 100,000 megohms. You take that Van de Graaff generator and load it down with 100,000 megohms, which to me is a huge resistor in ohms. You do that, which is the biggest open circuit I can come up with. My fingerprint has more resistance, more conductivity than that. You load it down with 100,000 ohms, you bring the machine down to half voltage. That's amazing. Tells me that you really got to have a dry machine. Any moisture on it gives you conductivity of that moisture that's going to short it out and bring it down to much lower voltages. So I got the thing nice and dry, got it in the dry living room, and it's running like a charm. And I wanted to do an experiment. I picked up a NE51 light bulb. That's a neon light bulb that's got the bayonet base to it. And I wanted to light that up. I know I could put some wires on it and bring it near and light it. I didn't want to take the time to solder wires onto the NE51, so I just laid the NE51 on top of the bulb of the Van de Graaff generator. Did this a couple of days ago. Turned on the Van de Graaff generator. And I smell it making its ozone and building up its voltage and doing whatever thing it's doing. And I expected to see the neon bulb sitting on top, connected to nothing, just laying on its side. I expected it to light. The neon bulb jumped off of top of the Van de Graaff generator. I said, gee, that's interesting. Where the hell did it get the power to jump? I turn off the generator, walk over there, and I found out why. Let's see if you can guess what happened to the NE51. Why did it jump off the top of the ball of the Van de Graaff generator? K2KEY, K2RIW with a puzzle.
Now, Roger, this is K2KEY. Get the gas. propelled it, blew the envelope, and the gas propelled it right off the top. Yeah, too bad I didn't see you about a year ago. You would have said something about that you'd like one. I just threw it out, really. I had one here, a homebrew one, with a big rubber, belt inside there, with a motor driven, with the copper contact, and the big ball on top, and all. I had that. We had a Jacob's ladder. I had another thing here with a Jacob's ladder. I brought it to school a number of times and gave it demonstrations and all, especially with the young kids. We gave a demonstration because, they were very afraid of lightning and thunder, so I made lightning and thunder, showed them what it's all about and everything and all. So I did a number of those demonstrations when the kids were small in school. And I had both the Van de Graaff and the Jacob's ladder. The Jacob's ladder really, that for some reason fascinated everybody more than taking one of these round fluorescent lamps that you put around your neck. and light up when you came near the Van de Graaff, and what else? I had a whole bunch of those things around Dick at one time. Go ahead.
You're telling me you threw them out, or I hope you dedicated them to some science group, or gave it to some young kid that's interested. In the case of the Jacob's Ladder, if you did that with, say, for instance, a neon sign transformer, yeah, I'd worry a little bit about the reliability risk. That has some real shock hazard, and maybe you wouldn't want to give that one away. But the Van de Graaff generator, except for a person wearing a heart pacer, is a fairly safe item, I think. Did you really throw it out, or did you give it away to somebody who would appreciate it, Mel? Go ahead.
Nobody wanted any of that stuff. The Jacob's Ladder, that was a Tesla coil. Used a Tesla coil. And the electronic circuit in there, but I don't remember. Basically, I built all that stuff from years ago. You remember, it was Popular Electronics. You always used to have different projects like that. The Van de Graaff generator, yeah, I built a wooden box and a thing, and on top of it had a when they used to have these brass toilet floats, you know, the brass ball that used to be in the toilet as a toilet float for the flushometer. Now they make them out of plastic, but one time, believe it or not, they were made out of brass. So I had that on top of their thing. And nobody wanted the stuff. Oh, had all kinds of stuff, Dick. It just had to clean up and all, and out it all went. I don't know, remember half the stuff that went out, but I had all kinds of stuff that I collected over the years. Go ahead.
There is one advantage of buying them new today. They come very nicely packaged, and a kind of a neat-looking arrangement. A homebrew one, depending on how much time you spend making a pretty cabinet and whatever, could look a little bit homely. By the way, that float in the toilet, you call it brass. I think it was copper. I believe it was copper. Maybe some of them were brass, but the particular one that was in the toilet in my house was copper. I could tell by the real coppery color to it and the way it blackened when it got tarnished. Although brass, I guess, would do the same thing. But it doesn't need a whole lot of strength. Brass is a slightly stronger material than copper, and so I think copper was good enough, and it was slightly hardened copper. But these modern Van de Graaff and Wimshurst machines do have some real pizzazz in the way made with them. Silver-plated and gold-plated and whatever items on them, and they can give an awful nice demonstration of what high voltage is like. But boy, are they persnickety. You take either one of those machines and you say, gee, a week ago we had nice, very cold, dry weather. So you bring it outside where it's nice and dry and cold in the dark, and you see what kind of beautiful performance you can get. And by the corona it makes, you see it glowing in the dark in all kinds of crazy ways. It's a very interesting experiment. I bought some of these toys that will make dancing pitfalls and whatever. I think it's called Somebody's Rain. I forget the name of this little thing where you have these little pitfalls that will jump up and down when you put high voltage in there. Can't think of the name of the darn toy. So, the wind it makes where the positive ions are flying away from the machine, you can put a pinwheel in front of it, and it's making a significant amount of wind. There's quite a bit of power in these things. By the way, you go to the head of the class. That's exactly what happened at the NE51. Not only did it ionize the neon in there, it ionized it so violently that the little bulb exploded. And the reason why, it looked to me like it just jumped off the top, and when I went over there to pick it up, I found that it was all in pieces. It exploded my little NE51. I hope there's still a Radio Shack product. But the mistake I had is I brought these things outside, I'm playing with them, and they worked like a charm. I simply walked it into the house. Because it was outside in a 15-degree weather, it was cold. Brought it into the house, and dew formed on it immediately, because it's a cold object being brought into a warm house that's got a moderate amount of humidity. The dew on these machines stopped them from working entirely. Instead of making 100,000 volts, I don't think they made one single volt, because they need a resistance of 100,000 megohms. That's almost a tera-ohm. 0.1 tera-ohm is what's required, and above, you want resistance even higher than that. You don't want to put a single fingerprint on the insulated parts of the machine. They're that delicate. You go to the website on how to tune up your Wimshurst generator, how to tune up your Van de Graaff generator. They start off giving you hints about aiming a hot hairdryer at them to dry them out, but beyond that, You got to wipe them down with alcohol. Don't touch them with your fingers. Handle everything with white cotton gloves and well-washed hands. You're not putting fingerprints and oils of your body on the machine if you want full performance. They are that persnickety. But it teaches you a lot about what static electricity is like. You put that into a, what do you call this now? It's something scope. It's got the two gold leaves inside that separate electroscope. It's kind of interesting to charge one of these things up with electroscope and watch the fact that it'll hold 100,000 volts of charge for 3 or 4 hours. Can you imagine the calculated resistance that will take a couple of picofarad of capacitance and hold a charge for a few hours at those kinds of voltages? We're talking about well into the tera-ohms here of shunt resistance. As an electronic component, those values are way out of sight. You pick up the best digital voltmeter you can, the whole DVM you can buy these days, and they go way up to 20 megaohms. Well, that's only 1% of what you need to start operating these machines correctly. K2KEY, K2RIW on the TechNet. Question? Go ahead, question. Start off with your name and call letter, sir.
This is Charlie again, KC2MPY. I just had a quick question about that Vandegraaff you bought. And is it the type that has a high voltage supply in the bottom, or is it strictly static?
Strictly static. Strictly static. The machine stands, about close to a foot high. No high voltage power supply required. Nothing but a small motor in the bottom pushing the belt. And it claims it makes 200 kilovolts. Well, I have various ways of measuring voltages. I own an extremely high voltage electrostatic type voltmeter. I think the machine is making 300 kilovolts. Because I've watched it make a spark that is 6 inches long. The thing, and air is good for 30 kilovolts per centimeter. 30 kilovolts per centimeter, which turns out to be around 76 kilovolts per inch. And when you jump through 4, 5, 6 inches of air like that, we've got some really high voltages. You don't need a power supply when you're using one that's well designed. Nice, simple design from this company in Buffalo. I can get you the exact name of the company if you like. The thing works like a charm. Back to you, Charlie. K2RIW, my name is Dick.
I'd like the name of that company. Since I was a kid, I was always interested in them, and always said I was going to build one or make one, never got around to it. But I was always curious about them, whether or not, because I've seen some articles and stuff on that use the power supply at the bottom to charge the belt, and others that were just static. Just curious, does it sound like the motor in it is extremely fast compared to what you typically think? In other words, is the belt turning very, very, very fast?
I'd say no. Now that you've asked the question, I'm going to do a little bit more checking on that. The motor sounds like it's running at a nice slow speed. I think it's an ordinary synchronous motor, a very small, slightly larger than a clock motor type thing. The motor that used to be in a turntable, it's about the size of the motor, maybe just a little bit bigger than a turntable motor. And it doesn't look to me like it's running super fast. And boy, that thing charges up in a hurry. And no power supply required, nice, simple design. Very effective device, a little bit on the pricey side. I think it was $130. But Charlie, you and I can either spend 2 weeks of our life gathering the raw materials and a lot of elbow grease and whatever to build a thing like that, or at our level of affluence, so 2 or 3 hours worth of our labor at the way your boss pays you, and you got this beautiful commercial product that is very nice and effective, and because it's a well-made commercial product that has a track record, a history to it, a good brand name, so to speak, if you tire with it, you go to eBay, and I guarantee you can get 95% of your money back if you suddenly tire with the thing. So there's a lot to be said. When there's a good brand you can buy, just go ahead and buy it. You don't have to build it, in my opinion. Very similar to what happens if a guy wants a good telescope. You can spend a year of your life grinding that mirror. If you want to learn mirror grinding, that's fun. But if you want to look through a telescope, buy a telescope. Maybe not everyone will agree with me, but you get a lot more fun in a hurry that way in some areas. KC2MPY, K2LIW.
Yeah, that's KC2MPY. Is that what you said? I thought maybe you misspoke there. Yeah, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. And when it comes to building it versus buying it, at this point, you're right. I should buy one if I want to play around with it. Same thing with the telescope that I bought, and that's probably another topic someday when you guys get onto it I can jump in on. But it's very interesting, and may I ask if, do you believe it builds its high voltage strictly from the old physics issues that the dome at the top has always got a zero potential at the center of a sphere, and if the voltage always goes to the outside of the sphere, and basically you can build a charge because there's always 0 volts at the center?
That's part of it. The nice thing about this thing when you buy it is it comes with an instruction manual that explains the theory of operation. One of the well-kept secrets in the world is something called the triboelectric series. Triboelectric series. You Google those words, and they will tell you that this kind of plastic alongside of that kind of wool, which one becomes positive and which becomes negative when you rub one against the other, and so on. Just like you have the electromotive series of dissimilar metals, you have a similar series of different kinds of plastics and insulators that you can bring together. Right, they've got a polyethylene pulley on the bottom with a rubberized belt, and those two items are on the triboelectric series far enough apart that they, just coming close to each other, the belt running over that pulley on the bottom creates a potential difference. And there's a little whisker of sharp metal spikes down there that discharges the metal belt in that area on the outside of the belt, brings it back down to ground, therefore the other side of the belt picks up the charge. The way static electricity works is that you ground one end, and the other end, the high voltage moves to the other end on the case of an insulator. So the inside of the belt is picking up a positive charge. The belt goes up to the top where there is a metal pulley, and the metal pulley is connected to that sphere. So you're depositing voltage continuously onto the sphere, and the voltage automatically moves to the outside. A static electric charge, the individual, let's call them plus signs, will repel each other. They move as far apart as they possibly can. The net result of that is on a conductor like that upper metal sphere, they all move to the outside of the sphere, and there is no charge on the inside of the sphere. In fact, one of the very early particle accelerators made a very large version of a Van de Graaff generator where a human being was inside of a laboratory that was inside of the upper spherical object. He never knew that he was a zillion volts above ground because he had this conductor around him and all the charge was going to the outside of the conductor. You go do a web search on Van de Graaff generators, and it was the very first particle accelerator way back in 1938, I think was being fed by the high voltage generator, which was designed by Mr. Van de Graaff. That's how it got its name. So it doesn't require a power supply. The power supply version probably charges up a little bit faster, maybe produces a little bit more current. You don't need it. The proper design can be extremely simple just by choosing the right materials. The motor doesn't have to move super fast. The same thing I noticed with my Wimshurst machine. When it's properly cleaned and tuned, I can turn those wheels very slowly and still make a huge voltage. I can make a spark jump, in the case of the Wimshurst, I can make a spark jump as much as 4 inches. At 75 kilovolts per inch, we're talking about 300 kilovolts. And when that spark happens, it always has a zigzag path to it. You watch the event in a darkened room, and you see leader strikes occur before the big strike occurs. Lightning does exactly that. And those little leader strikes that start ionizing the path first, they always have a zigzag path to them. I think they are the result of cosmic rays. I think you're seeing a beautiful demonstration of the way cosmic rays are there all the time, which way they're moving and what they're doing. That's my belief. That's what's happening here, Charlie. KC2, I think it's Mike Papa Yankee, K2IIW.
Yeah, I mean, it's fantastically interesting to think about that and to listen to you talk about that. Yeah, I just looked up the triboelectric effect. It's pretty interesting. Very interesting, in fact. Yeah, I always wanted to play one of them. I had made a big Spark transmitter one time, and that did some incredible things. I mean, that had sparks jumping all over my garage. Everything metal in the entire garage was arcing from one item to the other. And that was from a Spark transmitter that I had put together using a couple big plates and a big arc and a multi-spark discharge ignition system from a race car. And Van de Graaff was something that I always wanted to play with. I made a couple small Tesla coils. None were really tremendously effective, but they were worth the time for the fun of it. So it's just something I was always interested in. K2RIW, KC2MPY.
What you would really enjoy, Charlie, what you would really enjoy is that the Long Island Consultants Network has, for the last couple of meetings, been going through something called the History of Electronic Engineering. Can't think of the name of the man who's giving the series of lectures. And he started off with the very early guys, and on the last lecture he went through Westinghouse, Edison, Tesla, Hertz, and Edison, and also Marconi, and maybe two or three other guys. But this guy, Tesla, my goodness, was he a smart guy. He, for a short period of time, worked for Edison, as did Westinghouse, as did a couple of other guys. Edison ran a very good school. Anyhow, Tesla had a lot to do with three-phase power. Very significant development when it comes to distributing electrical energy. Very, very significant. Edison had it a little bit wrong. Edison thought that DC is the only way to go, and these guys, Westinghouse and Tesla, were strongly in favor of AC transformers for the distribution and eventually three-phase power. Beautiful invention when it comes to efficiently transmitting power, running a rotary machinery, and so on. And this guy, Tesla, he's famous for his Tesla coil, but he did a lot of other very good things. He was a little bit wrong when he thought he was going to distribute power through the air without wires. And he wasn't talking about radio. He wanted to really be the loco or the LIPA that transmitted power through the wires, through the air as one contact and the earth as the other contact. He was wrong on that one. Pierpoint, I think it was funding him for a while. Out in Shoreham, he built a great big facility where he tried carrying this one out. He made a huge Tesla coil out there as a beginning of that particular project. So these guys did some great things and did some slightly crazy things. Unfortunately, some of these guys didn't die as rich people, even though they did some very good things. And so that Tesla coil is a fun thing to play with, but it's an AC circuit. A DC circuit, like the Wimshurst high voltage generator or a Van de Graaff generator, where you can charge something like a human being and watch the hair stand on end and do some of these other experiments. In that particular case, DC is a little bit more fun, in my opinion. If you like, I'll get you the brand name. It's on the website. You can get it cut rate through eBay as a buy it now, or you can go directly to the Buffalo facility of this science company that sells, in my opinion, a very nice Van de Graaff generator. They sell a medium-sized one. That's the one I bought. They also sell a huge one if you really want to light up the sky in your neighborhood. Do you want me to go get that brand name for you, Charlie? Back to you, sir.
I was just going to look on the web to see if I can find that company if you say they're in Buffalo. I don't want you to go crazy. Go look for it. I know you mentioned before that you had put the neon bulb on it, and I was just coming into the room when you started to talk about that, and you said it jumped off, and it broke, or it broke while it was on it, or you think it broke when it hit the floor, because I was curious about that, and I was also curious, you mentioned the polarity. Does it charge the dome to positive charge relative to ground, or a negative? Do you know which one it is?
Positive. I'm 90% sure, 85% sure it charges the dome positive. There's ways you can make it work the other way, but it's not quite as exciting to use, and they explain that in the instruction book. The neon bulb jumped off the top of the ball of the Van de Graaff generator, not because it struck the ground. The Van de Graaff generator ionized the neon inside so violently the bulb exploded. It jumped onto the floor. The floor was a thick wall-to-wall carpet. didn't jump, it didn't break when it hit that carpet. It was broken before it hit the carpet. So that neon bulb,
I have a bunch of those NE51 type neons or those wired neons here. And just as a curiosity, obviously you're curious about that high voltage stuff with the neons and lighting fluorescent bulbs like I've done so many times on the crazy things, but have you ever connected one of your neon bulbs between your long wire antenna? That's what I use here. I haven't got much in the way of antennas. I have nothing but a long wire and a dipole and a J-pole up here. But in the summertime, my daughter, we sit and I connect the neon bulb between my long wire antenna and the earth ground, my ground rods, when there's a thunderstorm many, many miles away, and watch some of the most incredible things happen on that antenna with that neon bulb, that it's mind-boggling. It actually forms a relaxation oscillator between the antenna and ground, and you could see the polarity changing after lightning bolts in the distance discharge the air, and you can see that the antenna goes from positive to negative based on which side the which electrode is glowing in the neon bulb, and it's a really amazing thing to see.
Yeah, somebody should write that up. That sounds like a fun experiment as I see it, Charlie. The Wimshurst, Vandegrift generator, one of the articles I wrote on the, read on the internet, said you can connect two wires to either an NE2 or an NE51, put one wire in your hand, the other wire is a few inches long or maybe a foot long, and while the Van de Graaff generator is operating at one end of the room, you start walking in from the other end of the room and you watch that neon bulb light up. Very similar to the effect you're getting with your long wire antenna. And yes, it's a low pressure gas, and if you over ionize it, it will explode that bulb. I know that NE51, if I was sitting it straight up in the air so that one of the contacts was touching the center contact was touching the Van de Graaff ball, I could kind of understand it. This bulb was laying on its side on the glass bulb touching the ball of the Van de Graaff generator, and none of the metal was touching the metal, none of the metal of the socket of the NE51 was touching the Van de Graaff generator. I didn't think it would even light up in that environment. As I first turned on the machine, I did see a flash of light, and then from my point of view, it looked like it just jumped off the top. And I soon found out it exploded. I didn't hear the glass shatter, and then the pieces fell into the wall-to-wall thick carpet. So that's not how it broke. Obviously, I've got to put it a lot further away. If you build a electrostatic, what is it called now? A mill, a E-field mill, they call it. There's an article in Scientific American on how to build one of these things. They set them up around the Kennedy Space Center to know when a charged cloud is coming by, when they shouldn't launch the space shuttle. That would be a fun thing to build for your and my backyard. What you're doing is the equivalent to that with a neon bulb on the long wire antenna. There was another point I was going to make along these lines. Forgot what it was. Oh, yes. I saw a beautiful demonstration of this. February of roughly 1975, February, I'm on top of my tower repairing one of my pieces of hardline, the connector. It's a 100-foot tower. And I'm on 300-foot land in Dix Hills. So I'm on top of the tower doing the repair at dusk on a February cold day on a Saturday, I think it was. And so while I'm up there, it starts snowing. And I've been on the tower a few times when it starts snowing lightly. No big deal. I ignored that, except that I noticed that the snowflakes were the great big fluffy snowflakes, which were a whole lot of individual snowflakes stuck together. That was a clue. So I'm up there doing the repair, ignoring the snow, and pretty soon something is smacking me in the back of the head. And I said, how the hell can that happen? I'm 100 feet in the air, strapped in on this tower, and something is smacking me on the back of the head. I soon realized these snowflakes are jumping over and smacking me on the neck and on the back of the head. I also noticed at the exact same time that my 432 meg Yagi, which was a couple of feet above me, the tips of all the elements of the Yagi were glowing with purple and blue sparks coming off the tips of all the Yagi elements. I soon realized that a static buildup was happening in this snowstorm in the wintertime on this dry, cold day in February at dusk. And when I saw that those sparks coming off the ends of the element, and I'm hearing the sizzling sound, I recognize the sound of St. Elmo's fire, so to speak, I hightailed it out of there in a hurry. I went down and listened to the receiver, and I heard all kinds of fancy static on my 432 megacycle receiver. So when it comes to high voltage buildup, and that wasn't even a thunderstorm, that was just a snowstorm, we don't get lightning around here in snowstorms, but you talk to the people in Montreal in the winter, boy, they get some beautiful thunder on their snowstorms in the wintertime. Back to you, Charlie, KC2MPY, K2LIW.
KC2RCE. I recognize there. That's really incredible stuff. It's really, I find it so interesting to look at that stuff and read about it and talk about it. But I have to tell you one of the most exciting, fun experiments I've ever seen done with a fantograph generator. And it was to get kids interested in electronics. They took a Van de Graaff generator and about four or five kids and stood the kids up on plastic milk boxes. And each kid held their hands together. They held each other's hands in a chain. The last kid was given a great big bowl of popcorn to hold, a metal bowl filled with popcorn. Then the first kid put his hand on the Van de Graaff generator, and they started the generator. And the popcorn just flew out of the bowl, just poured out as if it was being pumped out into the audience of the rest of the kids. It was just a fabulous experiment. I mean, it's really an amazing experiment to watch.
KC2RCE to KC2MPY. I think the story you're looking for is Ebon Scientific.
All right, very good, and very interesting about your experiments. I had the homebrew version of the Van de Graaff generator, which stood about 4 feet tall with its base. It was much, much taller. Its base was over 5 feet tall. Homebrew job with a belt inside of it that was 8 inches wide. And it could generate tremendous voltage. And it was run by a motor from a projector. And it was a project, I could say. They used to have these projects in a magazine called Popular Electronics. All kinds of things to make that, Tesla coils, all kinds of contraptions. So homebrewing is a thing of the past with most people, but I've always enjoyed homebrewing. I've made many, many hundreds of projects, literally. Not all of them worked out the greatest, but happy to say that I have a number of successes. So this is K2KEY with the Limark TechNet. Anybody else want to make any comments? Go ahead, please.
KC2RCE.
Go ahead, KC2LCE. Go ahead, please.
KC2RCE. I think the store that's upstate New York that everyone's talking about is Ebon Scientific for the Van de Graaff generator.
Yeah, I would assume that Ebon Scientific could be a good source of things like that. I know years ago a lot of the projects used to get all kinds of things for scientific projects from Ebon. So they've been around a long, long time, always offered kits and things. So very good source, very possible that they're still, I didn't even know they were still in business, to tell you the truth. Haven't seen their advertisements of late.
They're still around. They still advertise a little bit. Charlie, you may want to look at that.
KQLIW is back. Had a transmitter failure. Went to the backup transmitter. Couldn't find the plug. Went to the backup handy turkey. Couldn't find the battery. So, sorry about that. KC2RCE, I think that's Dave in Deer Park. Are you still there? Go ahead. Are you the guy with that beautiful tower and Yagi antenna on the east side of Deer Park Avenue, close to a shopping center?
That's very close to where I am, but no, that's not me. I'm actually on a small vertical in the attic. My wife would not appreciate a tower.
Okay, I think you had a question or a comment. Go right ahead, Dave.
I was just saying to Charlie that Edmund Scientific, which is still in business, sells the Van de Graaff generator you're talking about, and I believe they still have a website up and running.
Yeah, but I didn't buy it from Edmund. I own a Wimshurst generator from Edmund, as well as I own one from the Science Supply House in San Augustine, Florida. And the Van de Graaff generator, beautiful thing, I'm really happy with it. I bought it from this company in Buffalo, New York. And if you like, I'll find you the model, the name of the thing. A little bit pricey, but very nicely done. So, Charlie, if you want, I can find you the... I know where the bill is, and I can go get it, and I can give you that name if you like it, if you're really interested in the subject.
I am. I just didn't want you to go chasing down a bill. I was just going to see if I could find something on the web, but there's just so many of them on here, it's probably pretty hard to figure out which place you actually got it from. But thank you. I appreciate it.
Stand by for about 1.5 minutes. I had that bill in my hand a couple of hours ago, and I'll go get it. Be back in a few. Talk to you guys.
So, Dave, you're licensed about 3 days now, huh?
Yeah, I'm almost a veteran here now. And I've only gotten the chance to use it a few times, and I have to stay on low power, otherwise I'll affect a few things in my house. I get a little RF interference here.
Oh, really? That's interesting. I'm surprised there's much you can interfere with VHF. I didn't even realize that.
My intercom system, it starts squealing when I transmit on high power, so I must have a break in my shield on my intercom wire.
Probably don't need high power at all to hit the repeater. I mean, this repeater is so fabulous. It doesn't need much power, as I showed you the other day.
Yeah, I'm putting out about 10 watts, and I'm probably hitting it full quieting at this point.
Yeah, is that the handheld you're using, or is that one of those other radios you tell me have? Or you don't have the handheld, you just have some other radio, right?
I've got two mobiles that I've playing around with. This is the second one. They're both radio check units, and I have a handheld that's ordered a battery for. Should come Monday or Tuesday. But this is all very low-end equipment that I picked up for practically nothing, and I'm looking around to buy something better.
K2LAW back. Okay, I think it was you, Charlie, that wanted to know the name of the company. It's called Science First. It says, Science First, Educating the Scientist of Tomorrow. Buffalo, New York. Phone number 716-874-0133. Beautiful Van de Graaff generator. As I said, a little bit pricey, $159. But for people of your and my affluence, if you want it bad enough, it's an awful nice performing product. Now back to you, Charlie, if you need to fill on any of that.
Okay, thank you very much. Yeah, I just hit their website. I see that one where on their opening page on their website with that's about almost the height of the kid that's on there. It's pretty interesting. Yeah, I'll have to look through their website and see about one of these things. But thank you very much.
Yeah, I'm very happy with this thing. It's potent. And if you want, I can also tell you the name of the factory where I got the Wimshurst generator. The Wimshurst generator is a lot more delicate as I find it. In other words, you really need everything super dry for it to give full performance, whereas the Van de Graaff generator is quite a bit more tolerant. Although you read a number of the websites where they give you hints and kinks as to how to get maximum performance, they do give you instructions on how to use a hairdryer to get maximum performance out of one of these. Now, when I forget which one of you guys were telling me about, maybe it was Mel, about a whole room full of kids all connected together, and the last guy had a bowl full of popcorn. For that to work well, all those kids would have to be well insulated from ground. Every one of them should be standing on a small, very high-resistance plastic stool of some kind in order to work well. If they were standing on ordinary tile floor, which is kind of conductive, I don't think that last child would have enough voltage left to make the popcorn jump out of the bowl. So who was it that gave us that story, and do you remember the children being well insulated from ground? They were touching each other, and the last one touching the Van de Graaff generator. KQLIW.
Yeah, it's me, Charlie. That was a demo I saw. And yes, I did mention that each kid was standing on a plastic milk box. You know, those plastic milk boxes, which are mostly air. They're just frames of plastic. And yeah, it worked absolutely fantastically. It was really a great demonstration. And then all the teachers went. This was in front of a bunch of kids, young kids that went to the science museums and stuff. And then they asked if anybody could explain why the popcorn did what it did, and that was the most fun part of it. And most of the teachers that saw it couldn't explain it either. KC2MPY.
Fantastic. How big was that particular Van de Graaff generator from your memory, Charlie?
It was about 3 feet tall. The overall height was about 3 feet. I remember it distinctly because I was looking at it intently before they started the demonstration, because I was looking to see whether or not there was a power supply in the bottom, how they were getting the static buildup, if it was strictly from friction. And they did say there was some disclaimers. They weren't sure it would work because of the humidity of the day, and it was, you know, it's in an air-conditioned museum, and it worked out just fantastic. It really was great.
So from the pictures that you see in the Science First website, if you do find it, I'm guessing that 3 foot tall is considerably smaller than the medium sized one I bought, which I would say is about a foot and a half, 2 feet tall. And then they also make one that is, looks like about 4 or 5 feet tall, a really super machine, which is a little bit more expensive, of course. But fun things. And yes, standing on those plastic milk cartons certainly insulates you from ground very well. In theory, some of those kids should have had their hair standing on end if they waved their head back and forth. And were they also instructed to not just jump down real fast from the cartons, to all hold hands while the last guy disconnects himself from the Van de Graaff generator and wait for a few seconds until the discharge occurs? If they went over and touched something grounded while they were charged, it wouldn't be dangerous, but it would be uncomfortable, the spark that would flow from your finger to something, so to speak. So do you remember them being given instruction as to how to discharge themselves after the experiment? And yes, you charge up light, fluffy objects with positive or negative charge, doesn't matter, but if they're all charged at the same potential, they will resist each other. Positive charges repel, light charges repel, so the pieces of popcorn were trying to repel themselves from the metal container and repel themselves from each other. So I bet they flew off in almost all directions. Is that true, Charlie? KQIIW?
That's absolutely true. I mean, that was it. And it's exactly as you say. They flew off in every direction. I broke out laughing along with all the kids, and I think I was probably the only person in Hope Place that actually understood exactly what happened, just like you described exactly. And that was just by luck, you know, but other than the people that put the experiment on. But no, the interesting thing, the kids were given no special instructions. They would just pick that, you know, ask anybody want to come and help and come out of the audience, and the kids get up. And they basically turned on the generator, and as it came up, the popcorn flew all over the place, and they just shut off the generator, and the kids let go of their hands, and they jumped down, and, you know, and there was no, you know, it didn't seem like anything happened. They obviously maintained a charge, each one of the kids. When they jumped down, it probably leaked off through their feet, you know, like it would normally do once they jumped off those milk boxes. But they weren't given any instructions of any kind, just to hold hands, and the last kid put his hand on the Van de Graaff, and it was really great. It really was.
How many kids were connected that way? I think you said the Van de Graaff generator was about 3 feet tall, and when they jumped down, were they jumping down onto a wooden floor or to a tile floor? And this is at a science museum. Where was this located, Charlie? Go ahead.
Yeah, it was. It's at the. It was a number of years back at the Jersey, the New Jersey. What do they call that? It's that science museum that's in Jersey in Liberty State Park. It's probably they call it now, right? And I remember it was five kids. It was five kids, and what bothers me is why I don't have a photograph of it, because I have pictures from that day, but I didn't photograph that event, and it really bothered me. But yeah, the floors were, you know, they weren't rugged, that's for certain. I would say it was either a wood floor. It was a sort of a one-step-up type of impromptu stage that they must have constructed so that they could be above the people sitting around. Looking at it. In fact, all the kids were basically sitting on the floor where this was a demo area inside the main area of the museum. It was in that hall. It was really good.
How long ago was that event, Charlie?
Let's see. It was when my daughter was probably at least, I'm going to say 10 years ago or somewhere is a little bit less than that, but 10 years. I guess she must have been in maybe 7th, 8th grade, somewhere around there. So maybe it's not even 10, so it's 7th grade. I'm going to call maybe 7 years ago. How's that?
WA2CDO.
Go ahead, Andy.
I've been listening. Hello, Dick. Dick, by the way, when you finish, could you give me a phone call? Then I'll just mention something.
Roger, Dodger.
Okay, I witnessed the exact same experiment, by the way, at a science center in Maryland. This was back in the early 90s, and they took people from the audience, and everyone was holding hands. The leader was holding the top of the Vandegrift generator, and he was holding hands with the next person, who was holding hands with the next, to the next, to the next, and they had about 10 people, and then the last person, I forget what he had, either a fluorescent light or an incandescent light or some illuminating device that lit up from his hand that he was not connected to, and this was up on stage, and we were in the audience witnessing this. It was pretty good.
Yes, science experiments like this, science demonstrations like this, I think can be very effective, and a certain percentage of those people in that audience will get turned on and become electronic engineers, become electrical engineers, get involved in science in some way. I'm disappointed that exciting like demonstrations of this kind so infrequently take place in our high schools. And it takes very little time to give one of these demonstrations, but I'm convinced the impact on the audience can be quite significant. And it can make a certain kind of inquisitive mind very curious as to what's happening, make them start researching on their own, why did it do that, how do I make it do it better, what are the ways can I use this, and so on. So I wish more of that took place in our schools. Anybody else wants to pick up, go right ahead. K2IIW.
That is K2KY. I'll tell you another funny experiment, over.
Go ahead, Mel.
Okay, I have one of these old generators around somewhere, these hand cranks that they used to use on the old telephone system. And if you put a 110-volt, 5-watt bulb, you know, and you crank it, it lights. It had the external horseshoe magnets. I wonder if you remember those, Dick, over.
I sure do. Were they called a dynamo, I think was the name they were given way back in the old days?
Oh, I don't know. They came on the old phones. If you see any of those old phones, back to the Alexander Graham Bell days, you had that hand crank when you wanted to, you know, make a call. You gave it a hand crank that was the ringer. So I brought one of those to the school also. I gave a demonstration of the kids with electricity, and I tried to electrocute the whole class. That we did it. I put all the kids sitting in there at their desk, had them hold hands all the way around, made a whole chain all the way around, up one line of desk, down to the other, started all, and put them all in series, Dick, and had the the little Japan generator at the front, when I said, now hold everybody, hold the hands tight, and I had the first kid with the contact on one of the contacts of this thing, and the other one at the other end, he's up the chain on the other contact, and I cranked it, and all of a sudden they all felt the shock, Dick, right through the whole chain. They all started carrying on, oh, I feel shocking, they all started, they got such a kick out of that, Dick, over.
What's your guess as to how many volts that machine of yours was generating, Mel?
Well, you know what you do, if you cranked it, I could say if you put a 110-volt bulb, 5-watt bulb across it, I used to have a little white 5-watt bulb, if you remember those little incandescent ones, it would light it, just almost bright, you know, it would flicker a little bit, but, you know, if you got it going, you can get it to light up, Dick, over.
Could you feel a difference in the amount of drag on the turning handle, whether or not a light bulb was there or not?
Sure, you can feel the back EMF. That's the scientific, that EMF, back EMF stick is unfortunately one of the tricks nature has played on us, over.
I wouldn't call that a trick. I would call that conservation of energy. If energy is flowing out, you got to be putting energy in. And you get nothing for nothing. If that wasn't true, we'd have an awful lot of perpetual motion machines out there right now. Let's see now. I think a Van de Graaff generator and a Wimshurst machine are a little bit more fun than a Tesla coil. You go do some web search, though, and you'll find at certain websites there are Tesla coils where people have built super-sized ones where they will make a spark that's 10 feet long. There's one website where a guy has built one, and he puts it in the middle of his garage, a two-car garage, in the dead center. And it makes a spark so long that it jumps to the walls of the garage. And we're talking about 10-foot jumps. He stands back 15